Security researchers have discovered there is new malware targeting Apple's iOS mobile operating system and OS X for Macs by going through USB connections. It's ominously named WireLurker. Now, the good news, if you want to put it that way, is that thus far, the malware appears to be only infecting Apple devices in China. However, and I put myself in this camp, Apple users, we've typically been able to sort of turn off virus or malicious software news with a sort of smugness about it being unlikely to affect or infect us or our devices. So when there's news of something like this in China right now, as it might well be, it's certainly something worthy of further investigation. And to conduct that, our IT security expert, Stil Gerrion, joins us. G'day, Stil.
Good afternoon, Will.
What can you tell us about this WireLurker?
Well, it's certainly, as the researchers who discovered it said, it's a bit of a game-changer, to use the cliche, or heralding in a new era. But you were right in what you said, that Apple's products have had the impression around them that they were more secure than the competition. Now, that's in fact true. Back in the day, Macs were certainly more secure than Windows computers. That's changed over the years. Microsoft has improved their game. And it's hard to make, you know, direct comparisons. But certainly the mobile devices, the iPhone and the iPads that run the iOS operating system, the general consensus amongst security people is that iOS is the most secure of the consumer operating systems out there. So it still is, for the moment, the safest bet. But that's a little bit different from saying that it is immune or invulnerable. And I mean, Apple has never said that directly, but yeah, they've certainly, you know, if people get that impression, they're not going to talk them out of it. I guess it's like saying that, you know, if Volvo was a safer car, that doesn't mean you can't crash a Volvo.
No.
But, you know, you'd be better off in certain circumstances. So what we know about this one is that it started when people, about 350,000 people in China, have been downloading software from their Macs from a site called Mayadi, which the polite way is calling that an unofficial Mac software site.
So it's dodgy.
It's dodgy as
right,
all get
okay.
up. And so people were thinking they were getting bargain software. Well, they were getting more than they bargained for, as it were. Much of the software was infected with this thing they've now dubbed WireLurker. So that infected their Macs, whether they were a desktop machine or a laptop. And then when they plugged in their iPhone or iPad to synchronize it and do all of the stuff, it would then infect the iDevice. Now, what makes this different is that the iDevice, as I said, the iOS operating system, was the most secure one and is still the most secure one out there. It's just that someone has gone to the bother of working out how to break into it. They've come up with an interesting way of doing it. And the security researchers that are looking at, okay, how have we done this now, are going, oh, this points to kind of some fundamental flaws in the way those devices synchronize when you plug them in, that to be fixed, Apple would have to re-engineer how they do that. So
wow.
Although we're only vulnerable at this stage, if we go to this particular dodgy software site in China, which, you know, we're generally not going to do, we're okay now, but as of today onwards, we've got all of the bad guys out there having a look at this and going, right, how can we copy this? How can we do it? And as one researcher said, well, although WireLurker appears fairly amateur, an NSA or the British one, the GCHQ, or any other sophisticated attacker could easily incorporate a much more effective and dangerous attack. So really the message is nothing to fear now, but people with Apple devices just need to be aware that now that they are so popular and now that someone has worked out a mechanism for getting in there, that they'll have to be paying more attention than they used to news stories and announcements about problems.
Yeah, it's an important point. Is this the USB as a sort of delivery device element of this, is that atypical?
Yes and no. It exists elsewhere. It's more that it's the synchronization between devices. What happens is that when you plug your iPhone or iPad into your computer, It trusts that computer and says, I'm the one that I'm paired up with, so I will now trust you to install new software on me without additional checks. So this attacker, WireLurker, has subverted that process. So it's essentially saying, okay, I'm on your desktop computer now, so I will install stuff on your iPhone or iPad and you'll trust me to do it. It will require a bit of engineering, and like all these things, it's a constant arms race between the good guys and the bad guys. So, you know, the Apple will work on this one and fix it as fast as they can. The bad guys will be trying to stay one step ahead, and it's just an arms race.
Have we reached that sort of tipping point now whereby it's now worthwhile for the bad guys, as it were, to start pursuing Apple devices in large number?
The numbers were there, particularly with the huge popularity of the iPhone after it first introduced. It's just that at that stage, the whole Microsoft platform was a much easier target. So they were still making plenty of money by taking that apart. They had the software skills to do it and so on. You know, they had their teams built up. They had all of their mechanisms in place. So it just wasn't worth putting in the extra effort to have a look at Apple's stuff as well, because it was a harder target. If we continue to discover some more subtle but deeper flaws in Apple's systems, then maybe they will turn towards it. Certainly in this Chinese case, it's one researcher was suggesting that it looks like someone was trying to work out who all of these software pirates are and reporting them back in some way. So that's probably to use our prime minister's language, that it's, you know, one Chinese dodgy software gang trying to work out who the opposition are and set them up. This sort of thing happens on the black market all the time. But you're right in the sense that the thing about big international organized crime, and that's the people who do this stuff, is they're a business like any other. It's about return on investment. And if they kind of think, look, this is just too hard, we'd have to spend too much money working out how to do it, it's not worth it, we won't bother. This kind of indicates that, well, someone is starting to take a proper look. It's still early stages, but maybe, you know, it will get worse.
You mentioned a moment ago, Stilgherrian, this issue of counterfeit software, and where this situation appears to have emanated from. Is the business of counterfeit software an emerging problem on the net, or is it something that it's been around for a while, but we've been naive to it?
The latter. It's always been there. Any software that comes not through one of the official channels, either directly from the vendor's online store or from, you know, one of the large trusted kind of stores that there are, there's always been a chance that it's counterfeit, in the sense someone's pirated it, and because they have to do a kind of software engineering process to crack it, because usually you have to have an authorization code to prove you've bought it and all of that sort of thing, they've already started cracking the software quite often. They will also add to it what's called a backdoor or a RAT, a remote access tool, so that if someone then installs that dodgy software on their computer, they can then take over that computer. In fact, some research done for Microsoft, when was this, last year, found that roughly a third of all of the downloaded counterfeit software they tested was malicious.
Wow.
And
it's just not worth it then.
No. And the same goes for the kind of cheap DVDs that are sold at markets and, you know, out of the back of boots at pubs and that sort of thing. It's, why pay thousands of dollars for this graphics software for your business when you can, you know, we'll do $200 and it's a whole disc full of a lot.
Yeah.
There's a good chance, you know, maybe a third or so, that is malicious, or another good chance it may not even work at all.
Still, we've been talking about over the course of the program this afternoon, the most powerful people in the world taking nominations from people on the back of Forbes' list that was has been released recently. In the top 10, in fact, in joint ninth position, you've got Larry Page and Sergey Brin from Google. In your view, as someone that's well-connected in the community, worthy members of the top 10 most powerful people in the world?
Look, they certainly deserve to be on the list, and kind of up in the top 10. Look, I kind of wonder, because you've got Vladimir Putin and Barack Obama and others, and the Chinese leader up there with nuclear weapons and submarines and armies and things. And as far as I know, Google hasn't gone down that path yet. Although they've got a private aircraft and stuff like that. They can perhaps start. But the thing is, we really are looking at this global revolution. It becomes a cliche to say this, but the internet revolution, which is transforming how society works, in many ways what it means to be human, just like the Industrial Revolution did. So in the same way that the people who built the railways and then the people who owned the oil fields and worked on oil distribution and so on became the incredibly powerful people a century ago, the people who handle information are going to be the people in the coming century. And indeed, even some of the people at places like the World Economic Forum and so on are referring to personal information or big data generally as being like the oil of the future.
Wow.
It's interesting that the technical term data mining has been around for years, but there is a sense that there's this huge global resource of information which we're only just starting to work out how to use. So if that is the case, Google is the biggest and best placed of all of those. Now, I know Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook is on the list too, but down at, 22,
I think.
22, or in the 20s or something further down. Now, although more people use Facebook than don't, at least in Western countries, the thing about Facebook is it only has a certain narrow window on your world. Narrow quite a bit. Who your friends are, how you spend your time, what your interests are.
Yep.
I mean, that's a lot. But Google also knows everything you search for. You use its maps. You look for images. Maybe you use their Gmail product. Maybe you watch videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
And it can cross-correlate all that stuff to generate a much more sophisticated picture of what you're doing. Also, Google is reinvesting in research, all sorts of leading-edge things, from robotics to self-driving cars. The Google Glass thing where you have a camera just above your eye and a screen and all that, that's kind of a bit corny, but it's experimental. Maybe it won't be like that, but they're also then looking at smart contact lenses. So you drop a contact lens in your eye and that is projecting data into your view.
Is that right? Is that just a thought bubble, or have they got some prototypes on there?
I'm not quite sure where they're up to with that. Certainly, smart glass is a thing. Corning, the big glass company, they are working out ways of embedding information displays into what, from the outside, looks like transparent glass. The sort of smart materials is an incredible kind of thing. Also, with the Internet of Things happening, with so many more devices, from light bulbs to fridges to cars to everything else being connected into a kind of smart information ocean that everything's connected to, Google is investing in that very strategically, very carefully.
These guys are almost a speculative pick in the top 10. That is, that perhaps they're not the most powerful now, but they've got a great deal of potential to perhaps head the list in the near future.
Absolutely, and I think that must be part of Forbes's thinking when compiling this kind of list, because these guys are really putting stakes in the ground in all sorts of technologies. And the other interesting thing about Google in particular is their attitude to exploration. Every employee at Google can spend 20% of their time, a whole day a week, if you want to look at it that way, doing whatever the heck they want.
That's phenomenal.
I mean, Google still owns what they produce because they're doing it in their time as an employee, but it means if one of their people just gets an idea and convinces a few colleagues, hey, let's spend time exploring this, they can and they do. And that is that attitude towards innovation and experimentation, combined with the fact that they deliberately seek out the smartest people they can find and pay them above the odds, even above the odds of normal Silicon Valley wages. And when we're talking here, the average Silicon Valley technical salary now is up at $220,000 a year.
Mm.
It was $250,000 a year the last measure, but that's because Mark Zuckerberg sold out several billion dollars of shares, and just his one number
dragged it up
the whole valley average up $300,000. So they said, let's forget Zuckerberg for today, but the average tech worker in Silicon Valley earns over $200,000 a year.
Gee, it's quite incredible. Still, thanks for helping us out with Wire Lurker and also being part of our conversation on the most powerful people in the world.
Well, pleasure, Will. Can I throw in most powerful person in Australia quickly?
Yeah, please do.
Peter Credlin, Prime Minister's Chief of Staff, because nothing goes into the Prime Minister's ear without her say-so, and nothing comes out of the government onto the media without her say-so.
Oh, I think that's a great nomination. I've been once in a past life working in politics in a room with the Prime Minister and Peter Credlin, and it was incredible to see. It was like a teacher and student. He sat on a chair.
Really?
She told him how it was going to be, the good words to use, what to avoid. He nodded his head and went out and did a press conference. I've never seen obedience like it. It was quite incredible. Great nomination.
Obedience is very strong.
Yes.
I'm stunned, but yes.
Yeah, I think it's a great nomination. Good on you, Still. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Will. See you next time.
Our IT security expert, Still Garion, joining us to talk Wire Lurker, but also about the most powerful people in the world and the most powerful person in Australia. We're taking your nominations over the course of the afternoon. 8223 0000 is the number if you'd like to give us yours. We're compiling them all, so if you've got one that you think, oh, this one, I'm not so sure, or they're not number one, but they should be in the conversation, just let us know. We're putting together a bit of a list, trying to get a sense of where everybody's at. Peter Credlin's a good one. I hadn't thought of that before. Very clever man, Stilgarian. You can also text in 1-999-1395. We'll continue that chat over the course of the afternoon. And in fact, speaking of Mark Zuckerberg, if you want to tell us who you think is most powerful via Facebook, you can do that as well. Just go to Facebook and jump on the 5AA page, FIVEAA, and leave your comment.